Brought to you, of course, by our friends at Buddy's. Goodies and glass. It's always 420 at Buddy's, baby.
You stupid wandering Greek.
How about this? You want some baseball news?
Yes.
The Mariners right now are two games back in the wild card, 86 and 70 overall. Starting a three-game series with the A's tonight. Chris Flexen pitching tonight against Cole Irvin. Yusei Kikuchi will not pitch tomorrow.
Yay!
Scott Servais making the announcement that somebody else will pitch in his place. Remember, Matt Brash was brought up last week from Double A to Triple A Tacoma. We'll see if he gets the nod tomorrow.
Yay!
And then we know that Logan Gilbert will go on Wednesday. If you're scoreboard watching tonight, looking for Toronto, New York, or Boston, all three have the night off. The Yankees are at the Blue Jays starting tomorrow.
Cowboys tackle Lyle Collins has been suspended 5 games for trying to bribe the league's drug tester.
Yeah, I saw that.
Christian McCaffrey's hamstring not injured badly, so he should return in a couple of weeks. And the Panthers, the latest team to have reached out to Richard Sherman.
I saw Nemhauser's tweet on that Lyle Collins story. He's exactly right. It kind of feels like bribing the league over a drug test. That should come with a lot harsher penalty.
Than five games.
That is crazy. AP poll is out. Alabama, Georgia, Oregon, 1-2-3. Michigan up 5 spots to 15 after beating Rutgers. Penn State down 2 spots after beating Villanova. Up 2 spots. And Arkansas is up 8 spots after their win over Texas A&M to number 8. Clemson, how about this, Dick? They're 2-2, and they drop 16 spots in the AP poll after losing to NC State. They are now 25th, 1 spot from being out of it altogether. All right, we're going to talk to Greg Bell in a matter of seconds from the News Tribune, talk some Seahawks with him. But one of the really bummers about losing to Minnesota is that you don't get the recap courtesy of our friend Paul Allen from KFAN Radio. All right. I mean, really, it was all about just getting the damn freaking recap, for God's sakes.
The Vikings may never win a game in Seattle, Washington.
But we do have one clip that we want to play for you. So this is mid-second quarter. Adam Thielen had just scored. It's 17-13, and the Vikings are lining up for the ensuing extra point. And apparently a knucklehead fan decides at that point in time to run onto the field at U.S. Bank Stadium. And this is how it sounded on the Viking Radio Network, courtesy of Pete Bursich and our friend Paul Allen.
Right. We've got a fan on the field, Paul.
Hey.
Doesn't happen much here in Minnesota.
And my guy's wearing Nordo salmon shorts.
Look at that. They're just letting him run around. Here comes security.
And a Diggs jersey, seriously.
I could have got down the elevator and got on the field faster than someone. Look at there. There he goes, Paul.
If Greg Coleman points to the right, that guy would know to head to the end zone like Diggs. Now he topples and rolls over at the 30, sprints away from a member of security
at
the 20. He's to the 5. He went to showboating and got buried by a member of U.S. Bank personnel.
He got the pylon down, Paul.
But the guy's an idiot. I mean, if you're going to get that close to the goal stripe, at least dive in before you get arrested.
Totally. It's exactly
he
right.
He slowed down.
I mean, you got one chance at glory, and
you
freaking
score,
blew it.
Man.
So, you know, I'm sorry about yesterday. I'm telling you, every time the Seahawks play the Vikings, I look forward to hearing Paul Allen's recap on Monday. And we couldn't get it done because the Seahawks freaking blew it yesterday in Minnesota. A guy who was there joining us from the News Tribune. Apparently just had a nice little back and forth with Pete Carroll, by the way, at the press conference.
You don't say.
Our friend Greg Bell is with us. Greg, how are you, man?
I'm well, guys. How are you?
Good to be back. We're good.
Seattle, even when it's raining.
Yeah, we heard you and Pete got into a fight, and it spilled out into the parking lot at the VMAC. Fisticuffs. Blood was drawn. What happened?
Well, I had to use some of my old Army tricks, and I've got some things I can do now. It was... You know, I was just trying to get a straight answer out of something that confused me after the game yesterday when Trey Flowers, and as I mentioned this morning to Chuck and Buck, Trey Flowers and DJ Reed deserve a lot of credit for being two of the only veteran defensive players who stopped outside the locker room and faced the music on this yesterday. And they were the two that, of course, are under the biggest microscope defensively. And for all the pass completions in front of them, there were veteran starters who did not do that, who declined to talk to us and kept on walking. So good on them, and I want to preface it with that. But Flowers said that we asked him to assess how he's played in the first 3 games. He said a lot of it, he thinks a lot of it's schematic, and that he has questions himself for his coaches on what he's supposed to do in certain coverages and certain schemes. So that led me to ask Pete Carroll today, which is it? Is it the scheme? Is it the players' confusion with the scheme? Is it the players who just aren't doing the scheme or aren't playing well?
Yeah.
And Carroll, of course, didn't answer that directly. And so I asked, okay, it's third and four. Your cornerback is 9 yards off the ball. I went back and watched a punt landing today. I went back and watched the game, guys. The 10 times the Vikings threw the ball on third down yesterday, 8 of those 10 times, a Seahawks cornerback was farther than the line to gain off the ball at the snap.
Wow.
So I asked him that. At one time, Trey Flowers was 9 yards off the ball on third and four in the third quarter. More than twice the distance to gain. So I asked him that. I said, "Here's what: if your guy's 9 yards off the ball on third and four, is that scheme? Or is that a player that's not doing his job?" And he went into this explanation about cloud coverage. Cloud coverage, of course, is when one corner's on the line and one corner has deep coverage responsibility off the line. The defense tends to roll to the corner that's on the line of scrimmage. And there's two safeties and the one cornerback responsible for deep coverage. He didn't answer fully whether they were playing the scheme the right way. The inference was we were in cloud coverage because the Seahawks were offset a lot. They had either Flowers or Reed on the line with the other corner off the line quite a bit on third down yesterday, which leads us back to DJ Reed saying, we got our asses schemed. Because that means they got out-coached and the Vikings expected the one cornerback way off the ball and they just ran simple out routes in front of him, which is what they did to convert 9 of 13 first downs. So Carroll was basically trying to say, you don't know what coverage they're in, so shut up. So that's kind of where it ended. He just said, we got to play better. We got to coach him up and put him in positions to play better, and we got to be more aggressive on the ball.
And by the way, we're going to play that clip with you and Pete going at it.
Good.
Mano-a-mano at 5 o'clock tonight in the coach's box, so stay tuned for that.
Well, Greg, break down the comment by Trey Flowers then, where he not only does he say he needs to go outside the scheme to make a play, but he doesn't know if that's best for the team, and then he also says, I've got my own questions to ask. It's a little gray area among a couple of people, and I'll fix it or somebody else will fix it. We don't know yet. My God. I mean, he's spinning around in circles right now.
He is. He's between two minds. He's like, they say that about soccer players who don't, are they shooting or are they passing? Or hockey players who are shooting or passing? That's what he seems to be playing defense like. Is he supposed to be aggressive or is he supposed to be off? All of this happened last week, guys, after last week, guys, when you remember Julio Jones and A.J. Brown blowing the doors off of the Seattle corners. It's the number one rule of Pete Carroll's defense. Don't get beat deep. Don't get beat deep. Cardinal rule. So it's obvious that they spent the entire weekend into the Vikings game saying, don't get beat deep. We're playing off. And if they want to cut in front of us and play underneath, fine. But we're not giving up the 51-yard post route like we did against Tennessee and what should have been a 72-yard touchdown to A.J. Brown if he hadn't dropped the ball. So that's what happened. They went deep. The Vikings are ready for it. When it's third and four and they're 9 yards off the ball, you run a 4-yard out with the guy not even in the play. And that happened time and again yesterday, and that's why 30 of 38 for Kirk Cousins and 3 touchdowns. So Flowers was articulating that after the game. Look, you don't want me to get beat deep, yet you want me to make plays aggressively on the ball. DJ Reed made a play aggressively in the second quarter on Jefferson's double move. He looked like he was running a post. Reed jumped it. Jefferson faked him out of his shoes, and he was wide open in the right corner of the end zone, an easy touchdown.
Yeah.
And he said after the game, I knew that was going to be a double move, but I went for it. I shouldn't have done it. That was a case of him being too aggressive and playing like everyone wants the cornerbacks to play, and they got burned on it. So it tells me that they're between two minds of whether to be aggressive or to play back as they're being drilled in their heads to play back. All of this would be solved if they had any kind of pass rush and pressure on quarterbacks right now. Because when you don't have pressure and the quarterback can stand back there for 4, 5, and 6 seconds, receivers can make double moves. You get caught between two minds whether to be aggressive or drop off, and the result was yesterday.
Well, Greg Bell is with us, and that's all on the defensive side of the ball, obviously. I'm looking at an offense that in the second half and overtime, the last two games, has been outscored 26-6 coming out of the break, and they've scored 13 points total after halftime. I mean, are they making adjustments in the locker room? What are they doing at halftime? Watching a movie? Taking a nap? I mean, this offense has been horrible after the break.
So if it's not even at halftime. They didn't score the last 41 minutes and 12 seconds yesterday. Mm. They scored with less than just under 12 minutes left in the second quarter, and that was it. They were up 17-7 and then 23 unanswered from the Vikings. So it is a little bit of a chicken and the egg, because when the defense is giving up such long drives, they're keeping the ball away from Seattle's offense. The field position gets skewed, and they can't do their full playbook when they're backed up against their goal line, even when they do make stops. It's come so bad defensively that for the offense, the coin toss is one of the most important plays of the game. If they lose the coin toss and the other team defers and gets the ball to start the second half, you have a situation like you did yesterday in Minnesota. A long drive to end the first half for a touchdown. You leave the Seahawks only 16 seconds of offense to play with the end of half. Then the Vikings got the ball right back again and scored to start the second half. That was 10 points in an hour. An hour of real-life time of the three-hour game that the offense didn't have the ball yesterday. So then what's happened is, after that long drought of not having the ball, I think first-time play caller Shane Waldron's panicked a little bit. Chris Carson carried the ball twice yesterday after the middle of the second quarter. Yeah. Now, he looked banged up. He was sitting on a Gatorade chest at one point in the second half, getting the lower leg looked at. But even Alex Collins didn't get more than a couple carries. Carson had 74 yards, guys, in the middle of the second quarter, as you know. And it looked like he was on his way to a career day. He ended up with 80. So he only got two carries in the second half, one in the third quarter and one in the fourth. And what you had is the offense had third and 12, third and 19, third and 7. That's why they went 0-for-3 on third down in the second half. The way Shane Waldron's offense is designed is to run the ball, short passes game early in downs, so that it's 3rd and 3 and 3rd and 4. And you convert, you keep the chains going, and you get your full playbook. 3rd and 19, you're not going to run the ball much. You're not going to get first downs or continue drives to get a chance to run the ball. If you're not going to run the ball, the offensive line's issues are going to come back and pressuring Russell Wilson, and they've had for years. That's the domino effect I see on offense.
Speaking of Russell, I mean, he had a big third down he didn't complete. We've seen him complete that for years and years and years and years.
Right,
and
Freddie's then all,
yeah, them. Yeah. And then we also have seen Russell Wilson in past seasons keep the ball on zone reads, and he is just not doing it. I mean, is he just making business decisions at this point in his career, saying, "Yeah, I'm just not going to take hits anymore"?
Many of the zone reads that to me are open to the running back, and that Carson and Alex Collins at 25 yards last week have space to run on zone reads. That's why he's mostly keeping it. But the pass game, yeah, he makes that throw to Freddie Swain all the time on third down. But in that play, he was backpedaling because of pressure again. Mm-hmm. And they brought an all-out blitz up the middle, double blitz up the middle, and he was affected and threw backpedaling, and the backpedal caused the ball to sail and go over Freddie Swain's head. I thought, bailed on a couple plays early, as he often does, because of pass protection issues in the past, that there wasn't quite pass protection issues, and he bailed on him a couple times yesterday. But he's not the problem, for sure.
Sure.
He hasn't been for years.
Greg Bell with us. So give it to us straight. How much trouble are they in?
There are 14 games left. So they're not dire. If you ask me that question in 2 weeks and they've lost two division games and they're 1-4, they're in big trouble.
Yeah,
obviously. So this is the definition of a pivotal week, guys. Pivotal meaning the season could go one way or another, whether they win or lose this week at San Francisco. Russell Wilson's never lost three games in a row. There is something in Russell Wilson that says he alone could win this game on Sunday at San Francisco. He's done it many, many times single-handedly before. But what he hasn't had is a defense this bad. And that is what is the factor that is the most concerning to this team. They're in big trouble defensively, if they don't change. I think the change is coming in personnel. I think Sidney Jones is starting in San Francisco for Trey Flowers at cornerback.
Wow.
The time was probably last week, and I think it's going to happen this week.
Is the defense worse now than it was after 3 weeks last year? Because everybody was talking about the historically worst passing defense in the history of the world last year after three games.
Yeah, it's like Groundhog Day to me. I'm asking the same questions and getting the same answers that I got in September and October last year.
Okay.
Remember, before Carlos Dunlap arrived in the trade, you remember the only pass rush they got was Jamal Adams blitzing. And they were giving up, like you said, they were leading the free world in points allowed and yards allowed, and they were on pace to break all kinds of records. So they've been here before. But what changed this year is they don't blitz Adams as much. They can't afford to because of the coverage needs in the back. And they have more horses up front to get pressure. They're just not getting it right now. But they've got Mayoa, they've got Hyder, who now has a concussion. Alton Robinson's getting now starting reps. They've got Daryl Taylor. They've got guys that they think can get there that they didn't have developed this time last year. They didn't even have Hyder and Dunlop on the roster. So they are more equipped to blitz less. And by the way, even when Jamal Adams is blitzing, he's just running into a pack right now.
Totally.
He's not effective at all.
Sometimes totally. Running not into his own guy.
No, that's what I told Dick, Greg. They can take him away as a blitzer, and they can use that to their advantage. He's not sneaking up on anybody. I mean, last year, after three games, he had 2 sacks, 3 tackles for loss, and 5 quarterback hits. He has no sacks, no QB hits, and 1 TFL. And he's not blitzing as much as you said, Greg, but he's still blitzing.
Correct. And you're right. And when he doesn't get home, obviously he becomes a liability because he's left the back door open in coverage. I can hear Hugh Millen yelling in the background. They're not paying him $70 million to be a coverage safety.
Right.
Yeah. So he's going to continue blitzing. He just got to blitz more effectively. But there's no doubt offense is a scheme for him. He's meeting the offensive tackles this year instead of running backs.
Yep.
They have decided that we are not letting Jamal Adams beat us on blitzes and devoting offensive linemen to him.
Totally agree. By the way, Hugh Millen just texted me. Tell Greg they're not paying him $70 million to be a cover safety. Okay. Wanted to pass that along to you. Greg, you're the man. Great stuff. And we're going to play your interaction with Pete at 5 o'clock tonight on the Coach's Box with Pete Carroll. Great stuff, and we'll talk down the road, buddy. Thank you, pal.
Thanks, man.
All right. Thanks, guys. Be well.
You bet. Greg Bell. Find him on Twitter, at Greg with 2 G's. Bell, we'll get a break. Joel Klatt will join us. Talk some college football. Have the Huskies climbed all the way back from 0-2? I don't think so. I don't think he believes that either, but we'll ask him anyway. Talk some dogs and a thought on the national picture, the USC coaching search. Joel Klatt, courtesy of VenueKings.com, coming up next.
Want to listen to Seattle's best sports talk at home? Say, Alexa, play 950 KJR on iHeartRadio. Powered by with Fox Sports' Joel Klatt. Brought to you by VenueKings. Visit VenueKings.com. Now with Joel Klatt, here's Softy and Dick.
All right, big thanks to our friends at VenueKings.com. Looking for seats for the next Seahawk home game next Thursday against the Rams. VenueKings has you covered. Be sure and use code Softy at checkout for a little discount. Maybe you're heading down to Corvallis this weekend. Want to watch the dogs? They can take care of you as well. But here he is, fresh off watching Notre Dame just destroy Wisconsin in Chicago this weekend. Our friend from Fox Sports, the number one color analyst in the world, Joel Klatt, is with us on the radio show. How are you?
Oh, that might be a touch of an overstatement, but it's good to talk with you guys. How you doing?
Well, we're good, and let's talk about, first of all, the local guys, the dogs, back to 2-2. They beat Arkansas State. They beat California. I don't know. I mean, you feel better if you're a Husky fan starting 0-2, knocking off a Sun Belt team in Cal, or do you still have maybe a few scars from the 0-2 start?
Well, I think that there's certainly still some scars. And then with those scars, in particular being on the offensive side, the lack of running game, they got it against Arkansas State, and you really wanted to see it against Cal, and then it kind of fell back to exactly what it was prior. And so I think that's, going forward, that's the biggest question I have. This matchup, by the way, next week for them with Oregon State, Oregon State's the number one rushing team in the conference. You know, well over, what is it, 220, 225, something along those lines. The Beavers are rushing for Washington, mm-hmm. dead last in the Pac-12, barely over 100 yards. That has to change for them. You saw it against Arkansas State, and obviously that's not a great team. I believe Cal's pretty good defensively. I think that Oregon State is something that is going to be reckoned with here all of a sudden after last weekend, what they did down at USC with Jonathan Smith in there. But there, make no mistakes about it. The run game has got to improve for the Huskies. I know McGrew ran for a few touchdowns, but they've got to get better running the football on a down-in, down-out basis.
Well, we saw at the goal line earlier in the game, Sean McGrew on the Wildcat for a score, and then in overtime, not one, not two, but 3 Wildcats in a row. So I'm wondering, should Husky fans be concerned that Dylan Morris isn't even getting an opportunity to throw the ball at the goal line when the game's on the line or even in the backfield there? Or is that just a situation where John Donovan sees an advantage and he's going to take advantage of it three times in a row?
Yeah, I don't know. It's got to be game plan specific, and that's certainly something that's decided on Wednesday. It was always a pet peeve of mine as a quarterback. I always thought it was going to be easier down there to have the ability to do both. And when you get into the Wildcat, you're just telling everybody that you're going to run the football. Now, maybe they were going to throw it. I mean, have some sort of jump pass or something with McGrew, but you just get the sense that you're making yourself one-dimensional. And I always felt like as a quarterback, that was not the way to go. I still feel that way as an analyst. I think that the Wildcat has its place. In particular, maybe with some tempo and a short yardage, like second and short, third and short, you're sneaking a new, fresh set of downs in the normal course of a series. But once you get inside that five-yard line, that's really tough. I think you better be pretty dominant up front, and they haven't shown themselves to be that. And in particular, when you're taking a look at a team that hasn't run it well anyways, to make yourself one-dimensional like that, I think is problematic. So I don't love the choice, even though it worked out.
Well, Joe Klatt, again, is with us from Fox, courtesy of VenueKings.com. And speaking of Oregon State, they won at the Coliseum Saturday for the first time in 60 years. So I know how old you are, Dick, and I know how old you are, Joel, and I'm 48. None of us have ever seen, up until last Saturday, Oregon State win a game at the Coliseum. And there's people out there wondering where USC goes from here. I know there's rumors about Deion Sanders' name got tossed out there for that job. What would you make of that possible marriage?
Yeah, I know that this sounds crazy. I actually think it would be kind of interesting because I've got this theory, guys. There's only a couple of programs in the country that at any moment are 3 years away from going to the playoff. And USC is one of those programs because of where they sit, where their natural recruiting base is. I feel that way about Texas. I feel that way about Georgia. And then to some extent, Miami, but not quite as strongly as the others. And this is a program that is very unique, in the sense that it's so urban. And because of where it's located and the market in which it's located, it and Miami share a distinctly similar history in terms of their quality teams. If you look through the history of Miami and the history of USC, what you'll find is that on their good eras, the players become massive stars. Massive stars because of where they're at. With that being said, you need a head coach that is not a dictator in order to have success. Look at the guys that have had success at both Miami and USC, guys like John Robinson, Pete Carroll, Jimmy Johnson, Dennis Erickson, Butch Davis. These are guys that had NFL DNA. Now, they didn't have to coach in the NFL prior, although most of them did. Jimmy hadn't yet, but he had NFL DNA. What is NFL DNA? NFL DNA is the ability to be charismatic enough to be a star yourself, but also comfortable enough in your own skin to where your players can be bigger stars than you. And that's the type of coach that USC is going to succeed under if they can get it. That's why, for me, my list would actually include Deion Sanders, because he understands it. He immediately gets a top two or three recruiting class in there and probably gets in every living room in the country. Gone would be the days where Clemson and Alabama and Ohio State can come and raid Southern California. It would put gates up around Southern California, not only for USC, but maybe for the Pac-12 in general. And it would be more like what it was in the early 2000s when guys like Urban Meyer said, there's no way I would go out to Southern California because that was a waste of money and time. So he would be on that list, but I think that there's also some other guys out there. I would call Matt Rhule at the Carolina Panthers. I would call Joe Brady, his offensive coordinator, who had success with LSU and is now an offensive coordinator there with the Panthers. I think the best candidate outside of Mario Cristobal would actually be Jeff Hafley, the head coach at Boston College. And the reason is, guys, because he has that NFL DNA and he's clearly succeeding there at Boston College and understands what he's doing as a head coach. So while that might sound crazy and a little far-fetched, maybe it's not as far-fetched as you think.
Joel Klatt, Fox Sports, joining us here on 950 KJR, as he always does on a Monday. Well, Joel, on Labor Day, we can pin in Alabama and Clemson in the Final Four. Well, wait a second. spots available now because Clemson has two losses. So who's the non-regular that's got the best chance to fill that spot in your mind?
Georgia. I think Georgia. But you bring up an interesting point, and that's because, yes, you could pin those teams in prior years, but then you could also pencil in, like, the two others.
Yes.
Oh, and, you know, it's probably Ohio State and Notre Dame or LSU Oklahoma. Or some combination of those three. It's Oklahoma, exactly. Great point. So now I don't think that you have those penciled in teams, which is what makes this year so interesting from a 30,000-foot viewpoint of college football. I think that there's actually more interest in the sport, one, because of COVID and people just wanting it and craving it, and two, because it's more interesting. We have more fan bases interested in the playoff level of the sport than we have had in years, maybe 10 programs, maybe 11. And I think this is a microcosm, guys, of what an expansion could mean for college football. In particular, if you were to include an expansion, four to six spots of automatic berths for the six best conference champions in the land. You know, even Washington would be, you know, playing more meaningful games at this point as they get ready to take on Oregon State. Oregon State would be playing meaningful games. This is a case study this year in why an expansion would be so good for the sport. Yeah. In terms of the interest of fan bases across the nation being engaged at the top level. But to your point, yeah, there's only a couple that we could pin in right now. And then the others, man, it's going to be a wild dash for the finish.
Joe Klatt, give us 30 seconds on the game you've got, because Husky fans are rooting like mad for Michigan to be really, really, really good this year. And they're 4-0, and you got them against Wisconsin this Saturday.
Well, I think it's going to be a low-scoring affair because both defenses, I feel like, are very good. Wisconsin is the number one defense in terms of rushing defense in the country. Notre Dame last week told me before the game, we're going to hand it off a couple of times just to do it, but we don't think that we can run the ball. We're going to have to throw it 40 to 45 times to beat this team. And I don't know if Michigan can throw the ball very well at all, to be quite honest with you.
Yep.
So this is going to be like the immovable force meets the, you know, whatever, the immovable object. So I can't wait to see how it all pans out. Low-scoring affair. There's a big part of me that thinks it's going to be really hard for Michigan to move the ball and score points in this game.
Joe Klatt, great stuff. Enjoy it this weekend. We'll talk on Monday, pal. Appreciate it, man.
Thanks, man.
Got it. I love it, guys. Have a great day up there, okay?
You too. Joe Klatt with us, courtesy of VenueKings.com. We got a break. Time to sound off. Dogs, Hawks, the whole spiel, 49451. Testimonials, the Coors Light text line, live from the Emerald Queen Casino. Before Monday Night Football, we're going to hear from Jimmy and Pete at 5 p.m. in the Coach's Box right here on 950 KJR.
Tune in tonight for Monday Night Football with Kevin Harlan. Kickoff at 5:15 on your home for every NFL.
This is Textimonials.
LOL, semicolon, parentheses.
Taken away Dave Softy Mahler
and Dick Fain.
I'm going to follow her right now on Twitter, at AllisonNL. Allison Lucan from Root Sports. Allison NL.
I had not seen her or heard of her until last night when I watched the game.
Data-driven storyteller focused on hockey, don't you know?
There you go. Now being followed by Dave Softy Mahler.
Just gave her a follow on Twitter. All right, here we go. 49451, Coors Light text line. Brought to you by our friends at Frost Brewed Coors Light. Keeping Seattle chill. Jackson tells me that people are very relaxed when it comes to the Seahawks.
Sure, I'm sure everything's all fine and dandy in Seahawk land.
No panic in Panic Town here at all. All right, what do you got? Go ahead.
Fire Pete ASAP. Hire Waldron to be the coach and hire a young defensive guru to be the coordinator like Brandon Staley.
Ooh.
We cannot choose Pete Carroll over Russell Wilson or Russ will walk.
But more than anything, I want better execution. Are we clear on that? I want better execution.
What have you seen from the offense that makes you think that Shane Waldron would be a good next head coach?
So Shane Waldron in the first three games, who hasn't adjusted to anything in the second half, deserves to be the head coach ahead of a Hall of Famer. Okay, all right, that's a hell of a start to Textimonial.
I mean, you kind of had me until you mentioned give Shane the job. I was like, all right, well, maybe it is time. All right, what's next?
I've watched the Seahawks since day one, and this is some of the worst football I've seen in many years. It's like both the offensive and defensive coaches have forgotten how to coach. Carroll looked confused.
They're fat, dumb, and happy and entitled.
How come nobody puts any of this on Schneider? He's the guy that built the roster, along with Pete Carroll, obviously.
Well, you know why?
He's the one that did nothing of significance at corner, and he's the one, along with Carroll, that did nothing of significance at center.
You know why?
Why? Tell
me
why.
Because I think a majority of Seahawks fans, including myself, think it's more of a scheme issue than it is a talent issue right now.
Well, I don't think it's a scheme issue at corner. I think the cornerbacks suck. Outside of DJ Reed.
But give him a chance to cover somebody.
I've been telling you that all year long that they're not good.
But give him a chance to cover somebody.
Trey Flowers is no good.
I agree.
Trey Flowers cannot play in the NFL.
It's one position.
Okay, that's one pretty big damn spot.
It
who else can play corner for you at right corner besides Trey Flowers? There's nobody else on the roster.
Well, let's hope Sidney Jones can
really?
And gets a chance to cover somebody.
We're going to count on a guy who's been banged up for 3 years, hasn't done anything. I like Sidney Jones from his time at Washington, but he hasn't proven jack squat in the
NFL. I don't think John Schneider goes without criticism. I'm just saying I think most fans think that the Seahawks have enough talent to be a really good team. We saw this team a month ago. We were all saying, this team should win 11, 12 games, win a playoff game because of what they had on paper and talent. And all of a sudden, did those guys just forget how to play football? I don't think they did.
I don't think they're this bad, but I also think that there were warts on this football team that we talked about the entire offseason. Everybody wanted to act like Akella Witherspoon was going to be the freaking new Richard Sherman. Why? Because the guy's a Seahawk all of a sudden? Nobody even knew who Akella Witherspoon was before the Seahawks made the move for the guy. I mean, Trey Flowers is bad. He's been bad for 2 years. He was bad against Green Bay, and he's bad now. I mean, what are we hoping, that all of a sudden a box becomes a triangle? The guy is what he is. I mean, shame on us, man. Are you kidding me? What the hell do you expect?
But let's stop protecting them. Let's stop protecting the cornerbacks like they're third graders playing against NFL wide receivers with 15 yards of cushion.
He shouldn't be out there, man. He shouldn't be out there. All right, what's next?
I was all in on Adams, but I'm thinking about that position seriously after these 3 games.
Ooh.
Just feels like a Jimmy Graham on defense, flashes but no real substance or benefit to the team.
I wonder, a fair comparison.
I wonder at what point in time people are going to call up or text up and say Hugh Millen was right about Jamal Adams. Because maybe he badgered it a little bit too much. Maybe he beat the dead horse a little bit too much. But Hugh Millen has been on the money so far with Jamal Adams. On the money. Name me a Seahawks fan out there that would not go back and redo that deal with the Jets if they could.
I don't think there's any.
Nobody would not redo that deal.
The only people that would are the people that think John Schneider is such a horrible drafter that he'd just get two more L.J. Colliers with those draft picks.
Yeah, but you could have used those draft picks and moved down.
Yes, you could.
And acquired more picks. I mean, at some point, we're going to owe that guy an apology. At least you people will. What's next?
You could see in the playoffs last year and in the offseason with Russell that something is wrong in the locker room. Don't think this time they are going to turn it around. Major changes coming this offseason.
Well, I will say this, that I think it's going to be a big couple of weeks, right? I mean, you play the Niners on Sunday, correct? And then you have the Rams on Thursday. So we're talking 5 days between games. That is as big a 5-day period, I think, as they've had this early in the year in maybe the Carroll Wilson era. So we're going to know a lot in 11 days from now. We're going to know a lot about this football team. I think this is a pretty, I think Hawk Blogger used the right word, momentous couple of 2-game stretch here.
I would approach that text there with a little bit of caution, because I think a lot of people are forgetting that this is the fourth time since 2015 that the Seahawks have lost two of their first 3 games.
Right.
The fourth time.
Right.
All right? And they won double-digit games in two of those 3 years that they lost two of the first 3 games. So, and they made the playoffs in two of those 3 years that they lost double-digit games. So they have a lot of experience turning things around, and there's a lot better chance if you just look at history of them turning things around versus this being a disastrous, 7-10 type year.
Well, they've got history, but they've got history with better players, and they have history with younger players, and now they're going to have to do it with a different salary cap situation. They're going to have to do it with a different secondary, a different offensive line, and now they have to do it against two pretty good teams in San Francisco and the Rams. So
it's gotta start this next 2 weeks.
I mean, 1-1 feels like, if I told you 1-1, would you take that right now in the next 2 games? If I told you could go 1-1 or you can roll the dice for 2-0, I would take it and I would run the hell out the front door of this casino.
And if they win next week, they're 2-2, and you said at the beginning of the season, would you sign up for 2-2?
Yes, I would take 1-1 right now and sprint to my car and go home. All right, we'll get a break. The coach's box. Jimmy Lake, Pete Carroll. Hear from both of them next on 950 KJR.
Counting you down to the first puck drop in Kraken history.
In the slot, he scores!
When they face off...
Kings.com.
Pick him up!
Need tickets for the Kraken home opener against the Canucks in a few weeks. Jump on the web, venuekings.com. We got Eagles-Cowboys tonight, 5:15 right here on 950 KJR with Kevin Harlan. Giants have lost linebacker Blake Martinez for the year with a torn ACL. And the Panthers picking up corner C.J. Henderson, plus a fifth-rounder from the Jaguars in exchange for tight end Dan Arnold and a third-round pick.
Saints Pro Bowl left tackle Teron Armstead will miss the next several weeks with an elbow injury. And St. Louis Cardinals have won 16 in a row. That's tied for the third longest streak in the last 50 years. They've also won 11 in a row on the road. That is second to the 1887 Philadelphia Quakers. Was Dick Baird a season ticket holder?
No, but I remember that team. They were pretty good. Great defensive team, by the way. Mariners tonight.
Yay!
Against the A's. Two back in the wild card. Three with the A's. Chris Flexen versus Cole Irvin. Yusei Kikuchi, Scott Service says, will not pitch tomorrow against the A's because he stinks.
Yay!
Matt Brash is at the stadium as we speak, but has not yet been added to the roster. Coach's Box, here we go. A Monday tradition. Every Monday at 5 o'clock, get to hear from both Pete Carroll and Jimmy Lake. We'll start with Jimmy Lake, coach of the Dogs, after their win over Cal on Saturday.
Just extremely proud of our team. You know, showed a lot of grit, a lot of perseverance. You know, things we talk about all the time. This beautiful game of football teaches you so much, and it was really rewarding to watch our guys grind through a tough game and be able to you know, pull out the victory there at the very end. A lot of really exceptional performances in all three phases. And then yet, as we watch the film, there's still a ton to clean up. There's still a lot of room for growth, a lot of room for development and improvement. And that's what we did yesterday. We went right back to work. Our guys came out to practice, and they're ready to get better. Love the work ethic of this team. And we're excited to see you know, us come out tomorrow on our Tuesday practice and see how much better we can get.
What stood out the most as far as what you want to clean up coming out of Saturday?
What stood out the most? I think, you know, it just comes down to execution against a team that's also really well coached with really good players who also are trying to compete and try to win the football game as well. You know, you got to give a lot of credit to our opponent. They did a good, nice job of executing, you know, things against our offense and our defense and our special teams. But it's just cleaning up those details, those little details that can push us over the top and make sure we're winning those battles in all three phases.
Jimmy, you talked after the game about the timeout in the fourth quarter. You didn't want to say the wrong thing that upset the conference, I guess. Did you get any clarification from them on the mistake by the officials or anything you can add to that?
Well, yeah, I got clarification during the game. And I'll just say this, they apologized. The mistake that was made, they immediately said, hey, that was our fault, that's on us, and we apologize.
Jimmy, was Newton not playing a health-related thing Saturday?
So he was definitely banged up. Yes, that's correct. He was banged up, and we had to limit him during practice all week long. He was going to be more of an emergency option for us on Saturday. Thankfully, we got out of there with a win and didn't have to put him in harm's way. He'll be good to go this week.
That's good news. Good clarification there. I was actually okay with the timeout Jimmy Lake called. I know a lot of people were critical of it, saying, oh, he almost cost us the game. And if you would have gotten more time, they would have lost the game. I like a coach when he's aggressive and he wants to call timeout to get his offense the ball back. I'm fine with that.
Well, I think it would have been a lot more sensical, if you will, if they would have had a minute and a half on the clock and not 37 seconds. And he actually called timeout with 20 seconds on the clock, which I think at that point, once you get to that point and too much time has run off and the officials have messed up, I think you have to bag it. And I think if he could do it over again, he probably would bag it. We'll talk about it Wednesday night with him on the radio show. Pete Carroll with the media, the second half of the Coach's Box, starts with Bob Condotta asking about the corners, but listen for the interaction here with Greg Bell in a matter of seconds. Check it out.
After looking at the film, what did you think of the play of your cornerbacks, and particularly just Trey Flowers and DJ Reed?
Yeah, well, the game turned out, we kept him in front of us is really what we did, and we had a lot of respect for the receivers and all. But that's kind of how the game went, and it felt like that a little bit. They threw the ball underneath us quite a bit, and we didn't do much to disrupt that. So, you know, I thought they played a pretty solid, conservative game, but didn't make any plays that could change it for us. We could have used a couple here and there, and unfortunately, we didn't get anything from any of the guys on that side of the ball.
When your cornerbacks are double the yards to gain off the line,
on third down? Say it's third and four and your cornerbacks are 9 yards off the ball. Is that a scheme thing? Is that a bad choice? Is that a player going outside the scheme? What's happening?
No, there's I don't know that mathematics there that you're talking about. You know, where there's a distance off the ball depending on what the down distance is.
That's, I'm just saying, when it's third and four and there's a guy lined up 8 yards off the receiver, so all he has to do is run a 4 yard out with no. Is that
scheme? Greg, that would be a good assumption if you know what coverage they're playing, because you can play off the ball and sit in cloud cover techniques where you have a chance to jump those routes. So that distance isn't always telling you what the story is. But I think you're trying to get me to talk about the corner play and trying to get me to tell you that there's an issue or something here. We got to get better. We got to work harder at our stuff. We got to make sure that we're putting our guys in the best positions and they got to take advantage of it. That's the way it is.
Well, what I'm trying to get at is that your cornerbacks told us yesterday after the game that they have questions about the scheme. And they aren't sure exactly at times whether they're doing it by the right scheme or whether they're not doing the right.
I don't know about what they said. I didn't hear that, and I didn't read that, so I don't know what they've said. What I would tell you is it was a frustrating game, and that's why we have Monday, so we get back to business. We everybody looks at the film together, and we talk through everything. Everybody gets on the same page.
What's been your assessment of the pass rush through three games?
We need more. We need to be more effective. We have not disrupted the quarterback. I mean, that shows you in terms of the turnovers and, you know, us being able to get after that football. It starts there. Our guys are working it. They're busting their tails to get it, and we just need to work together. I think the whole thing needs to work together tighter, and we cause some holding the football on the quarterback's point, and sometimes we disrupt, and it just needs to work together more effectively, and, you know, we're working for that.
Your run defense in the second half of the last 2 weeks, obviously Derek kind of went crazy, and then Minnesota ran for about 100 yards yesterday in the second half. What have you seen as the issues up front?
We have to be really clean with, you know, this is, running game is all about the discipline of making sure that everybody's in the right spots and everybody's hitting their fits well, and we got a little bit shabby at times. They had a couple plays that got out that made the difference, and they ran it 37 times, you know. That's what's common. They had the opportunity, as did the Titans last week, to just keep on running it, and eventually those yards get going and they can make some plays that add them up, and you know, we had a lot of plays where we played really well, and there was a lot of plays. We had 16 plays. I think there was 2 yards or less or something like that. You know, there's a lot of really good plays by us. But down the stretch, they've been able to work it pretty good, and we need to do a better job in finishing.
Yeah, a couple of injury questions, Pete. Benson Mayoa and Rashad Penny and Brandon Schell, do you have any update on those guys?
Really, we don't know yet on those guys. We'll wait, you know, until Wednesday and no more on all three of those guys. Sorry. Like, I don't have anything for you.
Sounds like you expect Eskridge to be back this week.
Yeah, he got a real good report coming out of his the work that he got done over the weekend. We'll see. We haven't seen him out here running around, but he feels really good and is excited about getting back.
Pete Carroll saying that somebody or a unit has to be better is as far as he'll go when it comes to criticizing players or position units on the football team. So you're not going to get Pete Carroll to go down the animated road that some coaches go down.
Yeah.
But I'm just looking at the offense, man, and I'm just flummoxed by their lack of adjustments. The second half plus overtime. So we're talking 65 minutes and 15 seconds because of the 5:15 in overtime against the Titans. They've scored 6 points. That's a game plus 5 minutes in the second half and overtime. They have done nothing out of the break offensively. So I don't know. I mean, I get the criticism of the defense, and I totally agree they have to be better. The scheme has to be better. But I thought this was Russell Wilson's football team, and they're not doing jack squat on their side of the ball.
They're not, especially in the second half. And I get Carroll's point about the rush defense. They only allowed 4.1 yards a carry. The problem is what you said at the very beginning of the show. There's too many plays.
Right.
They ran the ball 34 times. They passed the ball 38 times. That's 72 plays.
Let's get to Dallas coming up next. Eagles-Cowboys on Monday night coming up on KJR.
Many of the great things in life begin with a yes. It's Softy back here for my friends at 3010 Weight Loss for Life. If you're ready to commit to a healthy life.
Coach of the Beavers on the radio show tomorrow as well. Nice. At 3:30. Husky Honks at 4 o'clock. Brian Schmetzer on tomorrow, I think so, at 5:45. We got Kraken Hockey at 6 p.m. tomorrow as well on the program. What do you say we get out to Dallas, Texas, baby? You and I have been to the stadium, went to a Final Four there, and just watched the entire video screen the time we were there. It's unbelievable, that place.
Unbelievable.
We got foosball. We got Kevin Harlan on the call. Monday Night Football Cowboys and Eagles, enjoy the game. We'll see you tomorrow at 3.